Okay, we have the opportunity to get smart. Right. Learning Seder Nezikin is a very special opportunity in many ways, and among them, it is the key to intelligence. It is the key to getting smart. The Mishnah tells us at the end of Baba Basra that Harotze Lachkim, somebody who wants to become smart, Yasuk B'dilim Amanus. The only path, or the best path, there is nothing greater than that. There's nothing greater than involving himself in the study of monetary law. That is the best training for the mind. But it's not only because of its intricate and stimulating nature, but it's more than just its intellectual training. The Gemara also tells us earlier than that, in Baba Kama, Daf Lamed, that this is one of the three choices that Haman the Boy Mabu Chasida, that if somebody wants to be pious, if somebody really wants to be a good person, so then there are certain recommendations as to what he should learn. One of them is Maseches Brachos, we covered that already here. And another option is that he should learn Milei D'Nezikin. That if you learn the topics of Seder Nezikin, Maseches Nezikin used to be the three bavlis together. You learn these topics, so this is what will help you to become pious. So we see already that there are certain advantages to the limudim in these masechtas, that they are intellectually stimulating, yes, and they also sensitize us to how to treat others properly. And there is an additional element as well, in that they give us a special opportunity to access divine wisdom. Because the notion of mishpatim, the idea that there's an area of Torah which correlates to that which we can relate to, it's not so beyond us, but it's also more than we ever would have come up with in our own. That it's a unusual mixture of that which we could envision ourselves relating to, it parallels civil law, but it is still divine in nature. And there's an interesting medrash in the beginning of Mishpatim where we're told that Moshe Rabbeinu was hesitant in terms of how to transmit that section of the Torah of Parshas Mishpatim. And the Torah had to tell him, Eile Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lefneihem, that you should put it carefully in front of them. And the Mashiach Karbiyadim explained that he was afraid, Moshe Rabbeinu, that if you would go into too much detail, people would think, oh, I got this already. This is all stuff that is things that I could have come up with on my own. These are the same civil principles that every society has. And there isn't anything that's so mysterious about this. And the truth is that really this is the Chochmas Abari, just like the rest of the Torah. And therefore he wanted perhaps to preserve the mystery. That was his instinct. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, no, actually, Adrava, here you have to explain truth is in more detail and with more focus, because this is a unique opportunity to really understand what I'm all about and to really access the divine Chachma, because the more you can connect to what's going on, so the more you can access that divine wisdom. And therefore, there are vistas here that you can reach that you can't necessarily reach in other areas of Torah. And there's a comment that Rabbeinu Yonah has in his parish in Pirkei Avos, where he interprets the Mishnah differently than we're used to. The first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where one of the pieces of advice there is having the sunim bedin. So we normally translate that to mean that you should be careful and deliberate in how you deal with matters of judgment, should be muscled when it comes to din. Ben Yonah has an added interpretation there, that if you want to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam, so then you should ponder matters of din, that this is an opportunity that's qualitatively different than the rest of the Torah, because you can access the divine wisdom here in a different way, and that's something very special. So, Avi Masunim B'Din, that's something you can do to understand the Kodesh Baruch Hu differently than you can with the rest of the Torah. And there is a theme, really, that runs through all of Seder Nezikin. And having just finished Seder Lashon, you could perceive a theme there also, a different theme. I said Nashim from beginning to end is really all about, it's not really about women, that's a little misleading to say Nashim, but rather it's about Nashim in the sense of Ishtos and Besos, in the sense of a family, how a Jewish family is created, Jewish personal relationships, Jewish family relationships, and everything that surrounds that. And therefore, Nezikin takes it to the next level, and Nezikin is about creating the Jewish society. And all of the sections of Nezikin really take us down that path, how we create a Jewish society and all of the sensitivities that come along with that. So, for example, we start first now with Bavli Kama. Bavli Kama begins with the obligations that are incurred if somebody is mazik somebody else's property, if somebody inflicts damage on the belongings of someone else, you have to pay. And the first topic that all the achronim, the first shir kolik that is brought in the beginning of Bavli Kama addresses the question usually, okay, so we're told what are the liabilities, we're told what are the payments you have to make if you damage someone's property, but what's not really clear, what seems to be taken for granted if it is there, is the question of is there an iser lahazik? So what exactly is the prohibition? Let's say I would come up to your car and smash your windshield, and I have a, on my one hand I have a sledgehammer, on my other hand I have a checkbook. I'm ready to pay right away. So if I'm ready from the very beginning to pay for the damage, so does that mean I'm okay? I'm allowed to do that as long as I'm going to pay? Or should we assume, as most indeed do, that it's not only that I have to pay for the damages, but there's a prohibition to damage? And then the question is, if there is a prohibition to damage, as seems likely, and it seems indicated by most sources that address this, then what is the nature of that? So where does the Torah tell us not only that you have to pay, as it does in Parshas Mishpatim, but that there is a issur to begin with? So there are a number of theories as to what that issur is, but one of the theories that's particularly helpful as far as setting down the foundation for society is v'ahavta l'rechem kamocha. That's the position of the Yad Ramah and the Yashu Shlomo and others, that this is what tells us that we're not allowed to be mazik others' property. That there's a whole understanding, as the Ramban comments in Chumash, that v'ahavta l'rechem kamocha, as beautiful and as idea as it is, it actually can't really be a positive notion, because to say that you should do unto others as you would do to yourself to the same extent, kamocha, that's practically impossible. You can't exert yourself and extend yourself on behalf of others to the same extent that you do for yourself or even one person, let alone for everyone. So therefore, many understand it to be formulated in the negative, we call the silver rule rather than the golden rule, based on the language of Hillel, the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, Dalach Sani v'Chabrecha Lo Sabe, that which is hateful to you, don't do to others. So that translates here as a prohibition to be mazik, the property of others. So this notion of Yehav Tlarech Kamot, at least in one form or another, serving as the source for the opening of the Seder, is a very appropriate opening message that this is how you build a society. And it's really about sensitivity and care. Lech Sam Sofer has a tshuva, where he suggests that everything is derived from these chiyuvim, that basically the Torah is using a system of economic incentives that really we want to protect people, actually. But in order to create a society where people are functioning responsibly and they're not going to just act in a dangerous way or let their property be lying around in a dangerous way and start fires and leave them burning or let their oxen just run freely. So if we have liability, if it's understood that if anything does happen because you've allowed your property to be dangerous or your own behavior to be dangerous, so there's going to be a cost if any property gets damaged, so then you're going to take greater care and then society as a whole will be safer. So essentially, the Chasam Sofer understands that these chiyuvim of Nezikin are there in order to create a more sensitive society that is more protective of the people in it. And that's presumably also related to what the eighth parak will eventually discuss, Achovel, the principles of bodily injury, where the Torah describes that if somebody inflicts harm on somebody's person, on somebody's body, so there are theoretically, five different categories of payment. Each one's got its own story, and some are private nowadays, some aren't applied nowadays, but there are theoretically these five categories. And there, it's a discussion, Rav Gustman has a piece about this in Shiur, as to whether these are really comparable to the Zikin. When we talk about properties, it's the same notion that we had for the first problem about property transferred to a person, or very possibly is it really a whole different concept, which may indeed be the case. But even if so, it still has this element that it creates a higher level of responsibility as you function in society, and that that is, again, going to contribute to creating a public that is more sensitive and more careful. It's also noteworthy that, to go back to the Yisra Mazik, so one of the other suggestions, in addition to the Ha'at L'Rech and Kamocha, is also from the commentary of Rabbeinu Yonah to that first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, again, same first Mishnah, but a different Dibra Maskil, where Rabbeinu Yonah suggests that perhaps the source in the Torah that prohibits us from damaging people's property, even if we're ready to pay for it, is the prohibition of Lo Sigzol, that we shouldn't steal. Now, one could have thought that stealing has the component of making somebody else lose and you gain. That's how we would have defined stealing. So the Rabbeinu Yonah suggests that actually the chiddush of the Torah Lo Sigzol is that it really can apply even if you just cause somebody else to lose by, let's say, damaging their property, even if you don't end up taking anything. That's a violation of Lo Sigzol. So it happens to be that the Sechta in the end, the Mekam in the end, does focus on topics of Gezel and theft and the different forms. So we have Gezel and Geneva, for example, and they're formulated differently. That Gezel is open, and Gneva is when you steal in a hidden way, in a sneaky way, and as Chaim Brisker explained, that really they're both about Gezel. Gneva is Gezel plus. That Gezel is that you cause somebody to lose money inappropriately, or you hold on to somebody's money without authorization. And Gneva is that plus, because Gneva is that together with the component of deception, of sneakiness, which is its own issue. And therefore we find also that if one were to act in a sneaky way without actually keeping the money, for example, with the Gemara in Bava Basia talks about the Goneva Manas Lameka, if you would steal with the intent to give it back, let's say, as a practical joke, that's still prohibited. And the Rambam explains, because that's corrosive to your midos, that the aspect of Geneva, even without the Gezel part, even if you're not going to hold on to the money, but you're acting in a sneaky fashion, so that trains you to be sneaky, that corrodes your midos, and that's inherently problematic, and that also is destructive to society in the long run. So all of these messages are transmitted over the course of Bava Kamma. And then you get to Bav Metzia, and Bav Metzia starts with the description of two people fighting over a talus. Talus doesn't mean a shul talus, but a garment, two people fighting over a garment, and there the Mishnah says the policy is going to be yachloku, that they split it. But as the Rishonim explain over there, that's not the only approach when two people are fighting over something. There are all kinds of different fact sets when two people or more clash over a item. And there are actually many different policies you find throughout Shas. Sometimes you split it, sometimes there's ways for one to decide, sometimes it's just left in escrow for Mashiach to come. There are a number of different approaches how to deal with contested property. And this is something that Reverend Lichtenstein discussed in a shiur, as David Miller quotes from him, that there's different policies, so some of them means that you will be 100% right 50% of the time. If we end up choosing one person, sometimes it means he'll be 50% right 100% of the time. So for example, if we split it, it'll be 50% right all the time. So different approaches and different goals. And he suggested that it goes to the question of what exactly are we trying to accomplish when we address these situations. Are we going for the most harmonious resolution, maybe being 50% right so that we'll have some kind of harmony? Or are we going for the MS, are we trying to really uncover the truth here, so we'd rather be all right or all wrong, but at least we have the potential to possibly be correct, at least in some circumstances. So are we focused on the harmony? Are we focused on truth and justice? Or is it really some mixture of both, which is probably the case? And indeed, that's also a part of how we structure our society. And in the second part of Bava Metzia, the topic is picked up of Hashavas Aveda, the obligation to return lost property, which is itself its own concept that goes beyond Momenos. If the Yeshua comments over there, that you see it doesn't really follow the rules of Momenos, because the obligation on the finder goes beyond what would normally be required if somebody comes to claim the fact that he has to insist on proof. And it shows that there's an extra obligation towards the one who lost the property as part of the mitzvah, the need for Jews to help each other. And again, this becomes a societal principle more than just a straight monetary rule. And throughout the Masechta, you have a number of other ideas that are relevant to you that also go to how we manage society in a harmonious and effective fashion. The idea, it's a theme of this week's parsha, of Hashalom, the idea that sometimes you have to alter the truth, perhaps, in order to keep the peace, the notion of covenant brios, of what we do in order to maintain human dignity, the mitzvah of Tinu Frika, how you help somebody out if they're struggling with their luggage, with loading their animal, and there we find in our usual day that we're supposed to prioritize somebody who we have maybe a negative relationship with, because the assumption is that by helping them out, that will help to combat that negative relationship, those negative feelings. And again, this will be something that will increase the productivity of the harmony in society. We have the dinim of shomrim, the idea that we take on the responsibility for others and their property, and what that means and to what degree, all the different categories. The fourth part goes into the prohibition of onah, the idea that there's a issur involved in overcharging or underpaying, and that even though you might think, listen, if a person agrees to pay a certain price, and then that's their problem, as they say nowadays, do your own research, you know, so caveat emptor, so why should it be the problem of the other party? And yet we find that there is a greater obligation, so much so that it's actually considered a type of theft, even if one could have otherwise said that it should have been an expectation of the other party to know on their own or to do their own research. This is a chiddush, this notion of onos mamon. And in the end of that fourth parak, so there is also the idea of a lost varuk, the idea that we not only have a prohibition of price fraud, of misassessing the cost in either direction, but also of how we treat others, and the prohibition of embarrassing others in public, where the Talmud says that it is comparable to murder, is in that context where there's this prohibition of onos dvarim, of talking to people in an inappropriate way, in a way that demeans them. And there are a number of examples in the Mishnah of what constitutes onos dvarim, and some explain, Bleich has an article about this, that the common thread throughout all of them is that when you communicate with someone as if they are less than you, as if they are inferior, so that is the nature of that issue, and that perhaps is also the asynchronicity, the asymmetry, that is a connection to the concept of onos mamon. We also then find in the next parak, the prohibition of ribbis, of charging interest, which is also something uniquely Jewish, even though other religions have it also, but it's something that goes beyond the parameters of straight civil law, because by the rules of business, interest should be acceptable. You have an agreement between two understanding and willing adults to enter into an agreement to pay extra for a loan. There shouldn't be anything wrong with that. And yet we find this Torah prohibition. And the Avnei Nezer has a set of Shuvahs where he explains through his title, the Kuntras Bris Achim, that he calls it the section of the covenant among brothers. And Bris is an anagram of the word Ribbis. It's the same letters moved around, but that's not the only reason they called it that. It's also reflective of the nature of what Ribbis is about, that it's supposed to reflect
the understanding that even if it would be totally normal and reasonable to charge a little bit more, to ask for a little bit of compensation for lending your money, it doesn't necessarily have to be usurious, it doesn't have to be predatory, it could be a normal rate, but still it's prohibited anyway because you wouldn't treat your brother that way. If you had a family relationship, you would give them the loan for free, and we're told to relate to all of the Jews' family, that has its own reflection on the nature of the Jewish society. And there are other prohibitions that come along with this that the Baruch talks about also. For example, the fact that you're not allowed to put pressure on somebody who owes you money, and you can't interact with them in a way that's going to cause them to feel bad. All of that also speaks to how the society is meant to relate to each other. And throughout the Masechta, there are other themes about this harmony as well, the relationship between employers and employees towards the end of the Masechta, and that very delicate balance, which very often in contemporary society you see that skewed one way or another, either there's too much on one hand or too much on the other hand, and you see from the Gemara that there's a very delicate balance between the two, and an attempt to try to really create an environment that is fair for both parties. And throughout that Masechta as well, you find other meta values, such as the notion of Lifnei Mishur Sadeh, the idea that we have to not only follow the law itself, but go above and beyond the law, the principle that we call Asisa Hayashar V'Hatov. And in fact, if we fail to do so, so the Gemara says, that that's why Yerushalayim fell apart, that Yerushalayim was destroyed, Al Shehavidu Devrayim Al Din Torah. The fact that they insisted on Din Torah, which should sound like a good thing, but the Gemara explains it means that literally the Torah, exactly the Torah, they weren't willing to go with the Mishnah Sadeh. So this is identified also as a key component of a harmonious society. If you don't have a willingness to go above and beyond, then society falls apart. And then we get into Baba Basra, which again tells us how society is to be constructed, literally, because it tells us about the rules of neighbors and the kinds of construction that is necessary sometimes. Good fences that could make good neighbors, and the prohibitions of Hezekiah, of spying on someone and intruding on somebody's property. And that first paragraph also tells us about the rules of tzedakah, about the responsibilities of support that we have for each other. And together with that, the responsibilities towards tzedakah itself, the idea of the gabay tzedakah, gadol hamaasa, yoser min haosa, that the one who is able to make others give tzedakah is given a particularly exalted place in society. We also find there, relevant to this week's parsha, the Gemara identifying what was so terrible about stone. We read this week's parsha about how terrible stone was, but not necessarily what they did that was so terrible. And it emerges from the Gemara's in Baba Basra, we'll make Baba Kama also, or really under the surface in Baba Kama more explicitly in Baba Basra, that it was a complete anti-chesed attitude, that they didn't want others to benefit from their property, even if it would cost them anything. It was known as Zendana Vizela Chaser, and the Gemara tells us that that is the complete opposite of Jewish society, so much so that Kofin only the stone, that we compel Jews not to act that way. The Gemara has many ramifications of that as a principle. The Gemara also tells us there in Baba Basra, in the second parak, about a crucial aspect of Jewish society and community, and that is Yeshua ben Gamliel's institutions, which save the Torah, as the Gemara says, because that reflects our responsibility towards each other and towards the education of the population as a whole. The Agama explains that essentially that was a communal fund in order to make sure that everyone was able to learn, and the Shulchan Aruch Harav explains that this is from the basic obligations of the community, that there should be a school system set up for everyone. This is something that we've completely lost sight of in our contemporary Jewish communities. That's a real chaval, something that really needs to be restored. The Or Sameach explains that this is really just the Divin HaTorah, Shinatim of Anecha, that applies not only to fathers, but really to whole communities and to the Jewish society as a whole, to take on that responsibility. And then the third paragraph talks about the notion of Chezkas Abatim, which also includes the responsibility of neighbors to look out for each other and to tell them if somebody is living in their house. The assumption is that if somebody inhabits a house that's temporarily empty, that the neighbors will let them know, that they'll become aware of it. That's also a part of interpersonal responsibility in the community. And towards, sorry? That's also related, but at least you'll tell them that if somebody's taken over their house, that they should be aware. But towards the end of the Masechta, there's a fascinating concept called Arev, which is really literally about interpersonal responsibility, that same word of Kol Yisrael Arev Zel Lazeh, but the notion of being a guarantor for somebody else's loan, which is in a very fascinating way derived from the narrative of the Chumash of Yehuda taking on responsibility for Binyamin when they went down to Mitzrayim. And there, the Rishonim explain in different ways, but essentially the notion seems to involve one really stepping into someone else's shoes and taking on the responsibility for a loan, taking on the benefit that comes from the loan, and therefore actually deserving the responsibility. So the extent to which you actually are connected to each other through the concept of Ari is particularly fascinating and a very appropriate way for Baba Basra to end. And then that gets us into Masechet Sanhedrin. And Sanhedrin tells us about the court system, which is what keeps all of Jewish society functioning. It could be there's a machlokes, the Rambam, or the Ramban, depending on how you understand that, whether the main purpose of the courts was to settle disputes or to maintain law and order. But in that first paragraph, we also learn about Pshara, which is often mistranslated probably as compromise. That's the way the Bate Din nowadays try to convince, are supposed to try to convince the parties to do their business, to address their issues, but the idea of compromise really doesn't cover it. As Soloveitchik explained, that it's not really just about splitting the difference, because you wouldn't need qualified judges to tell you what the how you divide the claim in half, but it's really about what he called the psak shalufnim mishur sadin, that whole mentality mentioned before of the Fnim Mishur Sadin, bringing that into the Psak process, and that's essentially what Pshara is, and that's considered to be a very high value of society. And the Midah of Aaron HaKohen, who's wrote the Shalom, as the Gemara explains, and later on in the Masechta and Daf Nun Ches, you have the principles of Bnei Noach, which is about not just Jewish society, but about world society, and there are other Dinim there which also go to key aspects of society, a prohibition of haram asyad. Not only are you not allowed to hit someone, but you can't even raise a hand against someone as its own separate prohibition, which is a fascinating idea why that should be usher if you're not actually making contact. And it seems that there is a prohibition not only of hurting someone, but even just of introducing the idea of violence into a conversation already changes the whole tenor of society, and that's also prohibited. And the Gemara also talks there about the prohibition of being machzik machlokis. Towards the end of Sanhedrin, we have a prohibition not to be like Korach. And of course, that's one of the most corrosive things for society. Machlokis can completely rip apart communities, rip apart society. So to have a specific prohibition not to be machzik machlokis, and to understand not to be like Korach, which the Mishnah in Perkei Avos tells us is specifically a machlokis shelo l'shem shemayim, and luckily none of us ever think our machlokas in our shalom b'shem shemayim. We all feel like we're beisil b'shamay, machlokas is b'shem shemayim. But it's easy to fool ourselves like that. And the Mishnah says that the machlokas l'shem shemayim, sofo l'skayim, that will endure, as opposed to machlokas shalom b'shem shemayim, where we can easily fool ourselves. So the Kutzke Rebbe, with his characteristic sharpness, said, a machlokas l'shem shemayim, the machlokas you think is l'shem shemayim, sofo l'skayim, it's going to go on forever, because you think you're l'shem shemayim, it's never going to end. The machlokas that you don't think is l'shem shemayim, that sofo l'batel, that will eventually pass. But following Sanhedrin, we have then Masechas Makos, which talks about this punishment of lashes, in contrast with Misos Bezdin, which is what's discussed in Sanhedrin. So there you have this notion of Yarta Rabbi Karbecha, but in Masechas Makos, so you have the punishment of lashes, which is really the default punishment for every single prohibition of Torah without exception, with the exception of the many, many exceptions that don't fit the model. But the standard default for a lav is that there is a punishment of Malkus, and the Gemara tells us that Malkus Mokomiso Medes, which is a fascinating idea, it kind of stands in the place of Misa, which means that it's really the death penalty that you walk away from. So it's a way of saying that there should have been a Misa here, but it's a Misa that you're meant to learn from and to kind of reintegrate into society. So there again, it's about affecting society. And also in Masechas Makos, you have the notion of Ritzeach B'Shogeg going into Golus, which is also, of course, about the
level of sensitivity and care one has to have not to cause harm in society. The Gemara also talks there about the notion of greeting people b'shem Hashem, which was a takana that was made, and it's a question whether or not it's still in effect today. It could be the fact that we use the word shalom as a greeting, because shalom is a shem Hashem, so that's a way of keeping that takana going. But as Rashi explains in Maseches Brachos, that's a way to promote peace in society by reminding everyone about where peace comes from. And then we go to Maseches Shavuos, which doesn't seem like on the surface like it really has anything to do with Chagat Shavuos, but the truth is it actually does, even though it's not about the Yontif on the surface. It's about a different concept, oaths instead of weeks. But they say a story about the Avnei Nezer when he was, a baby, and his father was testing him on the Masechtas. He says, what Masechta did you learn if you want to learn about Yuma, about Yom Kippur? He says, Yuma, about Pesach, Pesachim. Want to learn about Shavuos? He says, Shavuos. He says, oh, you're still a little baby, you don't know that Masechta Shavuos is not about the Chagat Shavuos. And he responded, no, you're the silly one. That we say, Nishpati Vakeyemos, Bar Mishpatecha Kecha, that Shavuos is all about taking an oath to uphold the Torah. And indeed, all of that is about our integrity and our commitment through our word, and that's what that Masechta is about. In the third parak, about our commitments to God, take a shvuah between you and God, and all the other prakim there about the shvuahs between man and man. And the Gemara also there talks about other principles of society, the notion of dam l'chavshus, which Rashi explains as a way to keep society harmonious, because you don't suspect other people, which causes rifts in society. And the Mariel Diskin had a completely different perspective, but it's a way of upholding standards in society, that if you tell yourself that everyone else is trying to live to an elevated standard, you'll also live to an elevated standard. The Gemara there also goes through principles of Midvar Sheker Tirchak, how to maintain honesty in society. And a lot of these Masechtas also end on general values ideas. So the end of Sanhedrin talks about philosophical values. The end of Makos talks about values in general and about the effort to try to distill all of Judaism into a number of ideas, or into one idea, into the ideas of Tznius and Chesed and Mishpat or Tzadik B'Menasa Yichya. So all of that is represented in the end of those Masechtas, leading into Avodah Zarah, which is all about values, about good values and bad values, and the values that we try to stay away from so that we can uphold our true values and what we have to do in order to maintain distinction, to keep kosher and to Tefilas Kelim, different aspects of Halacha that help us to preserve our unique character. And then we get Maseches Horios, which is a little bit misleading, because it seems like it's the easiest Masechta, the shortest Masechta. It's actually deceptive, because it's an incredibly hard Masechta about very hard ideas about Sanhedrin HaGadol making a mistake and the Jews all being misled, or mostly being misled. The Rambam in his Perish Mishnayos writes that the purpose of Maseches Horios there is actually to remind us that we're all capable of making a mistake. But when we do make a mistake, then we all bring this korban together. And Reb Chaim Brisker and the Chazon Ish commented that we create this joint entity through our mistakes. So once again, it's about community in a different way. And then the Masechta also contains other themes that relate to society as a whole. The notion of Hatzalah, the obligation to save people, but also of prioritizing and saving people, where there's a focus on who contributes to society in different ways and how that impacts on how you save people. And then at the end of the Masechta, there is a fascinating discussion about if you want to choose a Rosh Yeshiva. So what do you choose? What skill do you look for? Do you look for the skill, what the Gemara calls a Sinai, somebody who knows everything, like all the Torah that was given in Har Sinai, or somebody who has tremendous analytic ability? It's what the Gemara calls an Oker Harim, and that he's able to uproot mountains with his sharp, incisive nature. Rosh Shechta likes relating that in Europe, they used to ask, man, how could it be a question? Because Sinai is a mountain, and an Oker Harim uproots mountains. So by definition, the uprooter of mountains is going to beat the Sinai. So the answer they would give is that the Oker Harim can't find the mountain. If you don't know the material, so then you're not going to be able to start analyzing. So there is a basic need to have the sources, and that's essentially what the Gemara does seem to reflect, that the hakol tricha l'marachisha, that everyone basically needs the ingredients. You could be the best cook in the world, but if you don't have the ingredients, you're not going to be able to make the meal. So there is that basic necessity. And there are those who suggest that maybe, okay, nowadays we have a printing press, and nowadays we have much more than that. We have searchable data banks. You might think there's less of a priority on knowledge, but if we really come to understand that without the knowledge and the learning in the first place, so we don't have all of the impact that the learning is meant to have on us, and that's how we started, that the Gemara, all of these Gemaras and the Zikin, as we mentioned at the outset, are designed to have an impact on us, both in terms of our intellect, yes, but also in terms of our character. These dinim help shape the way we think, but help shape the way we behave and the way we treat each other. They help us to have chachma and help us to have chasidus together as one. And it should be indeed our lot that through the study of Nezikin and everything therein, that we should be successful in getting all of the brachos that are promised from it, that we should have the special insight into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom, that it should help give us chachma in every sense of the word, help us to become truly pious and come together as a society. And of course, that's what we need very much today, the brachos of unity, the brachos of a society that lives up to its potential. And through all of our efforts to do so, may we soon see true harmony and true shalom, not only within Klal Yisrael, but without and throughout the entire world. Bikarev b'yameinu. Amen.